speak to the shot.
Representative Hink and members of the Utilities Committee, my name is Pete Dittesheim. I am the Advocacy Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine. I also served on the Governor's Wind Power Task Force, and I'm here to testify in support of the bill language that has been offered by Senator Mills to replace LD 1504 as introduced. This bill helps bring into focus the benefits of wind power, particularly the economic benefits to host communities, but I'd like to start my remarks speaking a little bit more about the generalized benefits of wind power to the state, as did the sponsor of the language. The committee is well aware of the energy and environmental benefits of wind power. Currently, Maine has 94 utility-scale wind turbines that generate clean, renewable power at Mars Hill, Stetson, Kibby, Beaver Ridge, Vinyl Haven. These turbines produce power to the grid without burning any fossil fuels. That's important in this day and age. These projects contribute to Maine's energy security by displacing fossil fuels that otherwise would have had to have been used to produce the same electricity. And in so doing, wind power is contributing to the state's efforts to meet our greenhouse gas reduction goals adopted into statute in 2003. And wind power is helping move us away from forms of power generation that are imposing serious security, environmental, and public health impacts on others, and by this, other regions of the planet, and also in terms of future generations. The wind power projects now operating in Maine under construction or having received permits will provide as much electricity on an annual basis as is used by approximately 175,000 households. Details on that are in an attachment A to my testimony. This is a considerable amount of power, rivaling the amount generated on an annual basis by Maine's largest hydroelectric dams. Attachment B shows how each of the permitted wind power projects in the white bars rank against some of our largest wind power hydropower facilities. I do that just to give you a sense of the scale of electricity that now is being generated by these turbines. Within 5 years, Maine may generate more electricity annually from the wind blowing across the state than from the water in our rivers. And that's quite a substantial change in where the state's renewable energy will be coming from. The hydropower will continue to be generated, and on top of that, we'll be getting a very significant amount of wind power generation. Wind power also is providing important economic benefits. Nearly 300 businesses have participated in the construction of wind power projects to date, supporting hundreds of Maine workers across the state. There's a map in my testimony that shows the location of all those businesses that have participated in the construction of projects in the state. And construction of each of the major wind power projects has resulted in tens of millions of dollars in spending on materials, labor, and services, providing an economic boost to businesses, communities, and households across the state. These are important benefits, but some of these benefits are fairly abstract, such as enhancing Maine's energy security or meeting our global climate change goals. And some of them are diffuse, such as providing jobs to companies spread across the state. It is also important to understand whether Maine communities that host wind power projects receive tangible benefits for doing so, as was required by the Maine Wind Power Act that was passed in 2008. The evidence so far suggests that they are, but LD 1504 as revised could improve how tangible benefits are provided to host communities. Over the next 20 years, wind developers are expected to provide more than $88 million to seven towns and two counties where operating or permitted wind farms are located. That's attachment D. And it describes the TIF agreements, the taxation payments, the community benefit fund agreements, the payment for electricity that has been negotiated between the developers and those communities. These payments will come in the form of a variety of ways to these host communities, and they're going to be very significant for those communities. One would be hard-pressed to point to any other form of capital investment that would provide this sort of taxation and benefit payments to these communities, largely in rural Maine. But the amounts vary considerably from one host town to the next when put in a standard metric of dollars per megawatt per year. And there's a chart that I have in my testimony that shows each of the different communities in that standard. Even for neighboring towns that are part of the same project, as in the case of the Rawlins project that involves four neighboring towns, Lincoln, Lee, Burlington, and Wynn. When the legislature adopted the Maine Wind Energy Act in 2008, it established a new tangible benefit permitting standard for projects in expedited permitting areas. The new standard is important, but was not clearly defined in the statute. As a result, state agencies use guidance document with quite vague descriptions about how a developer can meet that requirement. NRCM believes that there is too much uncertainty and variation when it comes to the tangible benefits provided to host communities, and the amended version of LD 1504 would help solve this problem, while also providing increased flexibility in how such funds could be spent by a host municipality, a host plantation, or a county, such as the example that Senator Mills described, if the project is in the unorganized territory. We support the concept of a legislated standard that would clarify for a host community what they could anticipate in terms of a tangible benefits package. The proposed level of $14,000 per megawatt per year for projects between 20 and 100 megawatts to us seems fair based on Maine's experience to date. Attachment E shows that the current average for host communities in DEP jurisdiction is just over that amount. Creating a common standard for projects moving forward would be a welcome improvement for communities as they evaluate the costs and benefits of a possible wind power project in their own town or county. A community does lose part of its visual resource in agreeing to host a wind power project. So better upfront knowledge about tangible benefits can help residents and local officials better weigh the costs and benefits of a proposal in their community. It also would help the state of Maine as a whole understand the economic benefits associated with continued development of wind power. Passage of this legislation would mean that every 1,000 megawatts of installed wind power in Maine would provide on the order of $12 million in annual tangible benefits to host communities. These are important benefits above and beyond those related to energy security, climate, lease payments to landowners, and construction and operations jobs. NRCM does not view wind power as a panacea, but we do believe that it is an important part of Maine's energy strategy moving forward. These projects provide significant environmental, often intangible, it appears, and economic, which we think can be more tangible, benefits to Maine people by helping reduce our dependence on fossil fuels and creating clean energy jobs. Passage of this bill would make the benefits for host communities more predictable and more tangible. We urge the committee to use the substitute language as the basis for your work session, and I appreciate this opportunity to testify. We'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Scheim. Are there any questions for this witness from committee members? Representative Fitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious, as you put this together, did you have interface at all with industry to see where they are in this process and whether they agree or disagree with your approach?
I shared the language with the association, the Renewable Energy Association. I had two conversations with one of the leading developers, conversations with three of the other developers. So, and this is over the course of the last week or 10 days. So I think there's been a considerable amount of discussion, and they've had copies of this draft approach for some time, as we've discussed. And the language before you reflects some of the suggestions that came in.
And Representative Fletcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the work session.
I can always count on you for some questions for the work session.
Only because if we get into it, we'll be here for hours. Help me think through this cost that's going to be added. What's the likelihood of that flowing through to the price of electricity? Which would require some assumption what's on the margin, whether natural gas is on the margin or whether wind power will be on the margin.
For work session, I'll certainly do that. The table that shows that this level of 14,000 per megawatt is above what some communities already have established, a little bit below what others would suggest, that it is capturing our experience to date. So it shouldn't have an effect, but I'll give it some further thought.
Okay.
Are there any other questions for this Representative Van Wee?
For this witness?
harkening back to the earlier book.
He was a witness.
Mr. Dishon, I appreciate your testimony. This committee spent quite a bit of time discussing community-based energy at a smaller scale and some of the potential benefits that we were trying to capture at the smaller end of the market. Could you just comment as to sort of how this approach is either consistent with or doesn't obscure or trump our efforts on that scale?
Sure. The threshold for the 14,000 per megawatt per year over a 20-year period would kick in at 20 megawatts. Most of the community wind projects likely are going to be much smaller than that. The Vinyl Haven project is 3 1.5 megawatt turbines, so for a total of 4.5 megawatts. And for the foreseeable future, and based on the legislation you passed, probably the community benefit, the community wind projects are going to be exempt from this. But community benefit, community wind projects have a different configuration. If they're owned locally, as in the case of the Fox Island Electric Co-op, they are capturing a different benefit package. And those turbines out at Vinyl Haven, as I understand, already are generating 40% more than was projected, and they're immediately translating into lower electricity rates on Vinyl Haven and North Haven, both of which have some of the highest electricity rates in the state. So there's a different approach to how a community might approach a community wind project, and they're thinking about different benefits because they're going to own it, in part or in whole.
Senator Mills also discussed he discussed the issue of trying to understand how wind could or could not lower electric prices for Maine consumers, which is a very difficult challenge. I'm assuming this really didn't address that concern head on. I mean, his original bill, I think he was trying to grapple with that. I'm just trying to understand kind of how this is consistent with or not consistent with that objective. I think we'd all like to try to find ways to capture some of the when wind is in fact lower, capture some of that benefit for Maine trade payers. Can you just comment on sort of that relationship? It's not real clear from his discussion and yours or how this substitute bill addresses that issue.
Well, his bill as introduced received quite a substantial level of opposition from developers, from our organization, and others who believe that it's difficult, probably impossible, to put that burden on one form of generation, wind power, because there's so many variables in the pricing of electricity. For a developer to be required to lower electricity rates would probably drive investment in wind power away. So in talking with the sponsor, we came up with a different configuration of how to ensure that Maine people are in fact benefiting in a significant and tangible way from wind power moving forward. I do believe that, and I think this is generally the understanding, that wind power does have a dampening impact on upward price pressures because there's no fuel costs for a wind facility. So they are bidding in at zero for the day-ahead market and displacing a more expensive form of electricity generation, which generally in this market will be natural gas. So it does mean that there is lower cost energy being added into the mix, but it's still a small enough slice, and it's never going to likely be above 20% of all of ice on New England, that it's not enough to guarantee reductions in electricity rates.
Do we have any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Sure.
Answers?
I think I do.
Oh, Representative Fletcher.